Hello and welcome to COVIDcast, a weekly Lowy Institute podcast for anyone interested in understanding the effect of coronavirus on global politics and international life. My name is Natasha Kassam and I'm a research fellow in the Diplomacy and Public Opinion program at the Lowy Institute in Sydney, Australia. Today we'll be focusing on Taiwan, a thriving democracy of 24 million people, an indispensable link in global supply chains, and a place often seen as a proxy for both the United States and China's ambitions for the Asia-Pacific region. But of late, Taiwan has been making headlines for its success in the COVID-19 pandemic. In normal times, Taiwan has over 500 direct flights and around 180,000 trips between Taiwan and China each week. And despite this proximity, Taiwan has contained the virus to around 400 cases, only 7 fatalities, and no community transmission for over 2 months. Here to discuss Taiwan's place in the world in the wake of COVID-19 is Joseph Wu, the Foreign Minister of Taiwan. Dr. Wu has been Foreign Minister since early 2018, and prior to that has headed Taiwan's National Security Council and Taiwan's mission in Washington. Thank you so much, Minister, for joining us here today.
You are absolutely welcome, Natasha, and it's my pleasure to be joining you today.
First, let me congratulate you on Taiwan's successful response to COVID-19. And of course, Taiwan is not alone in having contained the virus. We're doing okay here in Australia. But China has also managed to rectify early missteps and to reopen the country to some extent. I wanted to ask how China has been increasing pressure on Taiwan lately, and has China used the COVID-19 crisis to escalate these efforts in any way?
I need to clarify that China has always been applying pressure on Taiwan under whatever kind of circumstances. And the kinds of pressure that they would apply on Taiwan would include military pressure. They have deployed a lot of military systems along the coastal areas, and apparently they are used to pressure Taiwan. And during the pandemic, the Chinese military pressure has been increasing, and many people are saying that maybe it's a time spot where many other countries are preoccupied in dealing with the pandemic, and therefore China has a freer hand in dealing with Taiwan. And the second possible answer to the increased Chinese actions against Taiwan is that the pandemic is also bringing a lot of economic resource to China. The economic slowdown has been very apparent, and together with the economic slowdown, there's also a possible social discontent. And in order for the Chinese government to divert its domestic attention, the Chinese government is using military pressure on Taiwan, exactly the same way they're trying to apply pressure on Hong Kong. And for the diplomatic pressure on Taiwan, they have been doing that. And I think they are using their economic might or their leverage in the international organizations to pressure on Taiwan. Most noticeable example is the World Health Organization. Even though Taiwan has been doing rather well and has won the international praise for being able to deal with COVID-19, and also because of Taiwan's generosity in providing assistance to other countries. But China is leveraging its force in the World Health Organization to prevent Taiwan from being able to join the World Health Organization. So these are the two factors that we have been experiencing. And during the pandemic, we are feeling stronger pressure coming from China. So this is the way of life that we need to face China.
That sounds very difficult indeed. I have been studying recently, though, the evolution of Taiwanese identity as separate to China, of course, over time. And it seems to me that in some ways, China is changing its strategy towards Taiwan. Of course, the military and economic pressure, as you point out, has been ongoing. But something we've been paying attention to here in Australia is the idea of foreign interference operations. And I'm wondering, to what extent is the Chinese Communist Party using influence operations in pressuring Taiwan?
It's always been there. And we feel that China has been increasing its influence operation against Taiwan in the last 2 years or so. It's not because you know, I assumed the position as the Minister of Foreign Affairs, but I think the Chinese found that that is a very useful tool for it to influence other countries. For example, it's trying to pressure international airlines to change their destination on Taiwan from Taiwan or the Republic of China into Taiwan province of China or Taipei, a city of China. So this is a kind of heat that we are feeling from China. And other than that, the Chinese government is also providing all kinds of assistance to other think tanks or business organizations, universities, so that they can dominate the university or think tank decision making. And I think this is very apparent throughout the world. And of course, one of the items that the Chinese government is paying attention to is the way these organizations or business institutions are dealing with Taiwan. They want these institutions to deal with Taiwan as if Taiwan is part of China. So whatever we call it, sharp power or influence operation, it's been there for quite some time. And Taiwan is certainly feeling the heat coming from China.
So in the light of this kind of pressure that you've been facing for such a long time, Taiwan now has this newfound international attention because of how well it has done during this pandemic, and particularly in comparison to so many of the superpowers that have struggled. How do you think Taiwan can leverage this attention after its COVID-19 successes into more recognition in the world? And what role do you see countries like Australia playing in that?
Well, there are two things I need to say with regard to this wonderful question. The first question is how Taiwan can leverage our friendship or praise from the international community to our advantage. The way we look at it is a little bit different. The way we look at it is, you know, whatever we can share with other countries in making donation or sharing our experiences with other countries in fighting COVID-19, we try to look at it as if it's the right thing to do rather than trying to win appreciation or to have more influence with other countries simply because it is the right thing to do for Taiwan to provide assistance to other countries. We do that. It's a right thing for Taiwan to share its experiences in fighting COVID-19. You know, we simply do that. And another factor that we need to weigh in is our international standing. Many people can tell that Taiwan's international standing has not been very good because of China. And the best way for us to do is to win international friendship. And the way we try to work with other countries in providing our experiences, in sharing our experiences in dealing with COVID-19, wherever they are, whether it's in the United States or in South America or in the Pacific or in Africa, we think that we have won a lot of friendship. And that is something that we are very happy with. The more friendship we have, I think there will be more countries who are willing to speak up for Taiwan. For this particular World Health Assembly, the virtual one in late May, we see more countries who are willing to speak up on behalf of Taiwan. You know, some countries that have never said anything or did anything for Taiwan, but they are willing to speak up for Taiwan during the May Assembly. So we are very happy about this result. And we will continue to share our experience. We'll continue to do the right thing. We'll continue to provide donations, assistance to other countries wherever we think it's appropriate for us to make that contribution.
And of course, I think countries like Australia and some in Europe and India are very grateful, for example, for the masks that Taiwan has been sending. Having said that, those additional countries speaking up for Taiwan did not result in Taiwan being able to attend that assembly. So how do you view setbacks like that? Is this newfound friendship going to be able to translate into real outcomes for Taiwan?
Still going to be very difficult. You know, we have to be realistic. The Chinese influence over the World Health Organization is still very strong. If you look at the Secretariat's reactions to the United States or to China, you can tell the difference that China has much more influence over the World Health Organization. And therefore, we have to be very realistic about our prospect for joining the World Health Organization, either as a member or as an observer. But I think our effort is continue to win friendship so that there will be more countries who would speak up for Taiwan. And for this particular assembly, we see more countries than ever in speaking up for Taiwan. And as long as we continue to build friendship throughout the world, either in Europe or in Africa or anywhere else, I think we are going to have more people speaking up for us. And eventually, Taiwan will be able to participate in the WHO's related activities, conferences, things like that.
So at the same time as growing these friendships, as you mentioned, China has been seeking to put diplomatic pressure on Taiwan, including by poaching the partners Solomon Island and Kiribati here in Australia's region. Of course, there's now some suggestion that Kiribati might like to switch back. And I wanted to ask you how Taiwan felt about those relationships and whether the effort and the aid funding that Taiwan has to put into retaining its remaining diplomatic partners are really worth it, or if focusing on these informal friendships with other countries is more of a priority.
This is a very good question. Taiwan faces a very unique situation internationally. On the one hand, we need to build better and more relationship with the like-minded countries like Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Canada, Europe, and etc. And we've been working very hard on that with tangible results. And on the other hand, we also try to maintain diplomatic relations with countries in the Pacific or in Latin America. And we need them for the reason that they can speak very directly for Taiwan, not just in World Health Organization, but also in the UN, in ICAO, in UNFCCC, and etc. And we need them. At the same time, we want to maintain diplomatic relationship with those smaller countries, especially those in the Pacific, for the reason that we want to continue to provide assistance to them in a model we call Taiwan model. If you look at the way Taiwan is assisting those countries in comparison to other countries, the Taiwan way of providing assistance is to provide benefits directly to the people, whether it's job training or agricultural assistance or other type of assistance. I think they are benefiting the people directly. And I think we want the appreciation of those people who receive Taiwan's aids. And we want to continue to help those countries whenever we can. And because of the success and appreciation of the Taiwan model, I think this becomes a way for other countries to, you know, learn from Taiwan to be able to afford, to be able to help other countries that are in need of international assistance. So we will not stop simply because we think that we can continue to provide Taiwan model of assistance.
I think for many countries, it becomes complicated when you're trying to preserve kind of good relationships while also staying true to your own values. And I think that's clearest in Taiwan's case, where, for example, there's been some criticism that Taiwan assists Australia by providing medical care to our asylum seekers on Nauru. So how do you see Taiwan's ability to manage that balance between your kind of democratic values and commitments to human rights and retaining those friendships with countries that don't always behave in ways that everybody is proud of?
That was an issue. The refugees in Nauru was an issue that I came across when I was serving in the National Security Council back in 2016, when the Australian government officials and your diplomats in Taiwan brought the case to me that they have a group of refugees stationed, you know, staying in Nauru, and some of them may need urgent medical assistance, and they were asking whether Taiwan is able or is willing to provide assistance. And I say yes right away for one very important reason, that Taiwan wants to provide medical assistance to whoever that needs medical assistance. That's out of our humanitarian consideration. And the second is that those refugees were stationing in the Nauru. And Nauru is one of our diplomatic allies. And as long as Taiwan is able to help those refugees indirectly, that we will be able to help Nauru. So we agreed right away that we will provide assistance, medical assistance to the refugees in the Nauru. And so far, the program has been quite successful. There are quite a few refugees in Nauru that needed medical attention, were brought to Taiwan for treatment. And when they are done, they went back to Nauru, and many of them just wanted, you know, had such a high appreciation for the Taiwanese government for being willing to treat them. And it's not just Nauru, you know, there are refugees all over the world, especially in the Middle East. And in some parts of the Middle East, they don't have diplomatic relations with Taiwan, and there are no other countries that are speaking for them to come to Taiwan government. We think that it's the right thing to do by providing humanitarian assistance. So we are providing humanitarian assistance to the refugees that are in Jordan, that are in Turkey, and etc. And I think the amount is quite high. Even though there's not much report about our assistance to the refugees in those areas, but we think it's right thing to do, so we continue to provide assistance. So I think this is an easy balance for us. As long as there is a need for assistance, Taiwan will try to provide those assistance.
Speaking of that kind of assistance to refugees, you mentioned earlier the immense pressure that China has been placing on Hong Kong. And of course, over the last year, there has been a growing affinity between the democracy movement in Hong Kong and the people of Taiwan. Do you see a role for Taiwan in providing assistance to Hong Kongers who may need it going forward?
Yes, there are two levels that we are considering. The first level, actually, we have done quite a lot already, is about providing the moral support for the people in Hong Kong that are coming out to drive for Hong Kong's freedom and democracy. If you remember what happened last June, July, all the way till the end of last year, Taiwan's voice in support for Hong Kong's freedom and democracy has been overwhelming. And we want the appreciation of the Hong Kong people who wanted to fight for their own freedom and genuine democracy. And we'll continue to do that. You know, Taiwan is a democracy, and the authoritarian past is not that far away from us right now. So we understand the difficulties that the Hong Kong people need to endure in order to drive for their freedom and democracy. And we will not be shy in doing that. And for myself, I will continue to speak up for Hong Kong's freedom and democracy. And I will continue to argue for Hong Kong's genuine democracy or direct election as a way to deal with the current stalemate in Hong Kong. And the second level of assistance to Hong Kong is, you know, whenever there are people who are concerned about their political future in Hong Kong and they want to leave Hong Kong to seek for refuge or to seek assistance, Taiwan is always be a place where they can find safety and find hospitality. And quietly, we've been providing assistance to some of the Hong Kong people who are coming to Taiwan, including a very notable book seller, Mr. Lam, who is now resided in Taiwan, has opened his own store. And we are very happy that he's willing to come to Taiwan. And there are many others who are coming to Taiwan to operate their own businesses. And we just welcome them. And for those people who come to Taiwan for political reasons who are afraid of political persecution back in China or in Hong Kong, we will try to provide assistance to them in a very low-key way. And we don't want complications for their lives or for Taiwan's relations with China. So we'll continue to do that. And our government institution, the Mainland Affairs Council, is coming up with a package of providing assistance to Hong Kong. I think they're going to make it public in a short while. So this is a way we try to help Hong Kong. And very often I describe the relationship between Taiwan and Hong Kong is that these are the two outposts of democracy. And if the Chinese government can take away Hong Kong and to bring down Hong Kong's freedom and human rights, I think Taiwan is going to be the next. And more unfortunately for Hong Kong is that Hong Kong is already being returned to China, sovereign part of China back in 1997. And therefore, what we can do is to see if we are able to provide assistance so that Hong Kong can maintain its freedom and democracy, even though it is difficult. But for Taiwan, it's going to be a different story. You know, we are run by ourselves. We are not under China's jurisdiction. And therefore, we are calling upon the international society to look at Taiwan as an outpost of democracy in fighting against the expansion of authoritarianism. We are a frontline state, and we cannot allow Taiwan to be taken over by China. And we will, of course, fight very hard to maintain Taiwan's own status. But I think the international community should also look at Taiwan's situation and provide some moral support for Taiwan.
There's certainly been more support under the Trump administration from the United States in terms of major arms sales to Taiwan and legislation that's been passed in support of Taiwan's recognition in the world. Do you see prospects for future, perhaps, defense exchanges and cooperation with the United States? How does this support translate into long-term bipartisan support for Taiwan in the United States?
The support of the United States for Taiwan has been long running. I think our relations with the United States is very unique. It's very different from our relations with other like-minded countries. The United States has a Taiwan Relations Act to safeguard Taiwan's status and Taiwan's interest. And based on the Taiwan Relations Act, the United States continued to provide military assistance to Taiwan for Taiwan to be able to defend itself. And I think the Taiwan Relations Act is also calling on the U.S. administration to have sufficient deployment in this region to expel a possible threat against the status quo. So our relations with the United States has been very warm. But I think in the last few years, the relationship between Taiwan and the United States have been getting better and better and better. And it's not only the government, the U.S. government's moral support or oral support for Taiwan, but it's also been seen in the willingness to sell defensive weapons for Taiwan or to provide other type of assistance to Taiwan or to speak more vocally and to work harder in Taiwan's international space. So these are being seen, and many people describe the relationship between Taiwan and the United States that is the best ever. And we recognize that as well. And we hope we can continue this kind of trend of Taiwan relations with the United States. And of course, the United States is not the only friend that we have internationally. We want to build better relationship with Europe. We want to build better relationship with Australia, New Zealand, and et cetera. Even though Australia does not have a Taiwan Relations Act with Taiwan, but I think there's a good potential for Taiwan to develop closer ties with Australia. And I personally am very optimistic about that.
Do you think that Taiwan would consider being included in a travel bubble with Australia? We're discussing this at the moment with New Zealand as two countries that have been quite successful in containing the epidemic.
We are working on that right now. And it's not my call. It's our central epidemic command center who is doing all kinds of discussions to come up with our own measures. And I believe that our own measures for opening up the border is going to be proposed very soon. And whenever we have the proposed opening up measures, we will come to Australia, come to New Zealand, Vietnam, and etc. To discuss our own bubble in this region. And certainly, I hope that there is a way for Taiwan and Australia to come up with the common measures of opening up the border. So that there can be a bubble seen by the rest of the world as a model bubble.
One of my favorite Taiwanese-American writers, the scholar Catherine Cho, once wrote that Taiwan qua Taiwan has been living and fighting for that last bit of borrowed time before midnight for decades now. Long may it so continue. And so my final question for you today, Minister, is at this historic moment, do you feel optimistic or pessimistic about Taiwan's future?
Well, I'm always optimistic about Taiwan's future. Not only that Taiwan is thriving economically, Taiwan is also maintaining its own self-defense. And Taiwan's democracy has also been envied by many countries in this region, especially it's envied by the Chinese people. So we think that Taiwan can be a very good model for other countries in this region. Especially for those people who do not have a chance to enjoy freedom. And we want to continue to serve as a model for other countries to emulate. And I see optimism in Taiwan's future.
Taiwan certainly has been the envy of the world during this crisis and proven itself competent and capable when most of the world's great powers have struggled. Speaking personally, I am hopeful that we have a Taiwan-Australia travel bubble sooner rather than later. But for now, thank you so much for joining me today, Minister Wu.
Thank you very much, Natasha.
COVIDcast is a limited edition weekly podcast from the Lowy Institute. Thank you to my colleagues Jennifer Reinhardt and Erin Bassett for production assistance. Please keep an eye on our social media channels for details of the next episode, and you can stay up to date with all the latest developments on coronavirus in the world via the Lowy Institute's digital magazine, The Interpreter. Thank you all for listening today, and we'll catch up with you again next week.